who announced himself as Roger Kowalski. Giving the name of the real employee he had obtained, Danny said, "This is Bob Billings. I work in the Secure Communications Group. I'm at home right now and I can't drive in because of the storm. And the problem is that I need to access my workstation and the server from home, and I left my secure ID in my desk. Can you go fetch it for me? Or can somebody? And then read off my code when I need to get in? Because my team has a critical deadline and there's no way I can get my work done. And there's no way I can get to the office. The roads are much too dangerous up my way." The computer operator said, "I can't leave the computer center." Danny jumped right in. "Do you have a secure ID yourself?" "There's one here in the computer center," he said. "We keep one for the operators in case of an emergency." "Listen," Danny said, "can you do me a big favor? When I need to dial into the network, can you let me borrow your secure ID? Just until it's safe to drive in?" "Who are you again?" Kowalski asked. "Bob Billings." "Who do you work for?"
"For Ed Trenton."
"Oh yeah, I know him." When he's liable to be faced with tough sledding, a good social engineer does more than the usual amount of research. "I'm on the second floor," Danny went on, "next to Roy Tucker." He knew that name as well. Danny went back to work on him. "It'd be much easier just to go to my desk and fetch my secure ID for me." Danny was pretty certain the guy would not buy into this. First of all, he would not want to leave in the middle of his shift to go traipsing down corridors and up staircases to some distant part of the building. He would also not want to have to paw through someone else's desk, violating somebody's personal space. No, it was a safe bet he wouldn't want to do that. Kowalski didn't want to say no to a guy who needed some help, but he didn't want to say yes and get in trouble either. So he sidestepped the decision. "I'll have to ask my boss. Hang on." He put the phone down, and Danny could hear him pick up another phone, put in the call, and explain the request. Kowalski then did something unexplainable. He actually vouched for the man using the name Bob Billings. "I know him," he told his manager. "He works for Ed Trenton. Can we let him use the secure ID in the computer center?" Danny, holding onto the phone, was amazed to overhear this extraordinary and unexpected support for his cause. He couldn't believe his ears or his luck. After another couple of moments, Kowalski came back on the line and said, "My manager wants to talk to you himself," and gave him the man's name and cell phone number. Danny called the manager and went through the whole story one more time, adding details about the project he was working on and why his product team needed to meet a critical deadline. "It'd be easier if someone just goes and fetches my card," he said. "I don't think the desk is locked. It should be there in my upper left drawer." "Well," said the manager, "just for the weekend, I think we can let you use the one in the computer center. I'll tell the guys on duty that when you call, they should read off the random access code for you." And he gave him the PIN number to use with it. For the whole weekend, every time Danny wanted to get into the corporate computer system, he only had to call the computer center and ask them to read off the 6 digits displayed on the secure ID token. An inside job. Once he was inside the company's computer system, then what? How would Danny find his way to the server with the software he wanted? He had already prepared for this. Many computer users are familiar with news groups, that extensive set of electronic bulletin boards where people can post questions that other people answer, or find virtual companions who share an interest in music, computers, or any of hundreds of other topics. What few people realize when they post any message on a newsgroup site is that their message remains online and available for years. Google, for example, now maintains an archive of 700 million messages, some dating back 20 years. Danny started by going to the web address http://groups.google.com. As search terms, Danny entered encryption radio communications and the name of the company, and found a years-old message on the subject from an employee. It was a posting that had been made back when the company was first developing the product, probably long before police departments and federal agencies had considered scrambling radio signals. The message contained the sender's signature, giving not just the man's name, Scott Press, but his phone number, and even the name of his work group, the Secure Communications Group. Danny picked up the phone and dialed the number. It seemed like a long shot. Would he still be working in the same organization years later? Would he be at work on such a stormy weekend? The phone rang once, twice, three times, and then a voice came online. "This is Scott," he said. Claiming to be from the company's IT department, Danny manipulated Press, in one of the ways now familiar to you from earlier chapters, into revealing the names of the servers he used for development work. These were the servers that could be expected to hold the source code containing the proprietary encryption algorithm and firmware used in the company's secure radio products. Danny was moving closer and closer, and his excitement was building. He was anticipating the rush, the great high he always felt when he succeeded at something he knew only a very limited number of people could accomplish. Still, he wasn't home free yet. For the rest of the weekend, he'd be able to get into the company's network whenever he wanted to, thanks to that cooperative computer center manager. And he knew which servers he wanted to access. But when he dialed in, the terminal server he logged on to would not permit him to connect to the Secure Communications Group development systems. There must have been an internal firewall or router protecting the computer systems of that group. He'd have to find some other way in. The next step took nerve. Danny called back to Kowalski in computer operations and complained, "My server won't let me connect," and told the IT guy, "I need you to set me up with an account on one of the computers in your department so I can use Telnet to connect to my system." The manager had already approved disclosing the access code displayed on the time-based token, so this new request didn't seem unreasonable. Kowalski set up a temporary account and password on one of the operation center's computers and told Danny to call me back when you don't need it anymore and I'll remove it.